Welcome to the FemNation podcast, where we wholeheartedly believe women entrepreneurs can rise together. Success comes in many flavors. There are no secret strategies. Women entrepreneurs are rewriting history by defining success on their own terms. Hi, I'm White Dove Gannon, the down-to-earth chick with a different name. Entrepreneur and founder of the Female Entrepreneur Movement, our business is dedicated to helping women start and grow their businesses, increasing financial independence. Each week, join me for inspiring stories and powerful interviews of women entrepreneurs sharing their lessons to success to help you take your business to the next level. Now, let's go for it. Welcome back to the FemNation podcast. Today, we have a special opportunity to have two guests on our podcast. Today, we have Gretchen Fox, CEO and founder of the MTO Agency, which stands for Made to Order. We also have Kat Eves, who is a senior brand strategist for MTO, but is also a personal celebrity stylist. So we're going to get to know a little bit more about what they do, but we're going to first thank you guys for being on the podcast today.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Yes.
Super exciting to talk about being in business as women and also talking with an awesome badass from the FEMS, the Female Empowerment Society. So we're excited to be here.
That is, and that is such a killer group. It's almost like, you know, the secret society of cool badass women, right? Anyways, so in all of that, and however you guys want to talk about the journey, whether together, individually, however you guys have, you know, merged your lives, merged your entrepreneur walk, share however that looks for you, because again, this is a platform that is for you guys. But I want to start with the first question of how did you become an entrepreneur?
Kat, should I start?
Yeah, kick it off.
So my entrepreneurial career started and stopped and started and stopped and started again, like many entrepreneurs. Mm-hmm. And I think it's important to share that because I created a production company. That was my first entrepreneurial initiative when I worked in film production in like 2003 and four, working on small productions. It wasn't a real company, but I ran my like contractor, basically freelance contracting business through that. And it was hard work and pretty soon felt like I needed a real job. So I went back in-house and then went in-house as a marketer and working in film production. And then I tried again and I created my GFox Interactive. Which also looking back wasn't a real company. but I was building business for myself and, you know, had kind of like a baby fraction of a company that I thought was a company. And then wound up feeling like I needed to go in-house because it's so hard to make money on my own. I didn't really know how to do that. Mm-hmm. And then when I finally created MTO, I spent about 8 months figuring out how I needed to do it. Now MTO will be 6 in February. Trial and error is how I started. My mom is an entrepreneur. I've always been attracted to running my own business. I always thought I could run my own business, but it's really, really hard. And it took a few failed attempts to be able to kind of go back and do it again successfully. So I want to share that because I want women to know, people to know in general, that if you're struggling and you have to shut down what you're doing to go get work from somewhere else, that doesn't mean it's over forever. And a failure is part of the entrepreneur experience. And, you know, my feedback is if you're driven to do that, then kind of just get back up and try again. So that's my
story. Nice.
I think that I can relate to so much of that myself. So from my own path, I started out as a book publicist. I did that rather successfully in-house for publishers in the Bay Area for 7 years and really felt like it was tugging at me that I was good at something, but not in love with it. And so I've always had a love for fashion. It's something I've always wanted to do. It's that age-old story of you go to college and your parents are like, don't get an arts degree, please. And so that's how I ended up not going into fashion earlier on. But I just really felt like it's now or never at a certain point in my 20s. And I worked on using social media to get through, kind of through the back door without a fashion degree, to get into styling, and ended up working for a bridal wear e-com site, and thought that it was my dream job, and it started out that way. And then the company culture turned out to not be a great fit for me, and it was a real crash and burn. So I have a similar sort of like failure to launch story. And then from there, just thought, you know, went back basically like crawling back to the safety of marketing and publicity work that I had done previously in the publishing world, and worked for a year with a company that completely burnt me out, even though I learned so much and considered it like a master's crash course in marketing and up-leveling. I did not want to go back to an office for a long, long time after that. And so I picked up, my husband is a photographer, and I said, now it's really now or never. I'm in my 30s. If I want to get this styling and fashion career off the ground, I got to do it now. So my husband and I picked up, we moved to LA, and I hit the ground running and started working in styling my first week that I was in LA. So, but similarly had another crash and burn, which was that financially trying to figure out how to run a business and be a hustler, get all this new work, it was just so much. And I was so burned out from my previous job. And then now I'm having burnout on my own dream. I had to take a step back. And that's when, by really, truly just sheer luck for me, Gretchen had posted into the group that I mentioned earlier, the FEMPS, that she was looking for people who were interested in working in marketing or who had a background in it, working remotely and part-time. And I said, oh, that's what I need. I need to get a little stability back in my life. Financially, things were really tough. I learned just how expensive it is to start a business, especially in the fashion world. And it was such a breath of fresh air to be able to sort of slowly work my way back into working in more of an office environment type job. And it's been almost 2 years that I've worked with Gretchen now, and it has in many ways surprised me, because I always thought that it would be a failure to go back to working with having a day job. But in reality, it is what feeds me and allows me to love doing the styling work again. And so we're in kind of a unique scenario where I get to be a stylist and I also get to have a day job, and I get to use both sides of my brain, and sometimes together in the same place working on stuff with MTL. So,
oh, that's amazing.
It's really cool to be able to have that flexibility and to have that honored and treated like it's a bonus for our company that I get to still do the styling. So Gretchen's created a great culture for me to grow in. And it's been a huge saving grace for me in my passion project work, and also, of course, just my paying my bills.
Right. Which gives you the opportunity to, you know, be in both spaces. Right.
Well, I will say, as a business owner, that, you know, I think it's really important that we support our team members fulfilling their dreams for themselves, their full self. I think about it as a whole human aspect.
Right.
And both, so we support Kat's styling career, both from a, this is what she cares about, and when she's fulfilling herself in this way, then that's what's best for her, and what's best for her is best for us. Mm-hmm. And then also, it is great for us with business, because she's styling celebrities and she's our brand strategist and she's creative and she's doing really great work. And, you know, I think that's an asset for us. I think a lot of companies, too many companies, really try to kind of continue on with that sort of industrial revolution error thinking of minimizing, you know, the worker down to the most basic tasks to keep consistency, instead of, You know, I think that's that we've seen the research that shows that actually demotivates humans, makes them unhealthy and unhappy. And there's all sorts of lost productivity by operating that way. However, you know, I think most businesses do still operate that way. And I am, you know, my own anecdote of seeing the difference of how employees contribute when they feel supported in living their dreams and having this stuff. And, you know, it takes some work, you know, especially the fact that it's not just for Kat that that's the situation. It's for all of our team. So we have to work around schedules. She just had a super, super great weekend styling for the Emmys. And, you know, we had a client even at the same weekend that it would have been great for her to attend. But this was a conflict. And, you know, we know how important working the Emmys are for her. And she crushed it. So, mm-hmm. you know, and we were capable without her. And we made that work because that's what's best for her. And what's best for her, again, is best for the company. So, you know, I really encourage the entrepreneurs who are listening to your program to really think about the culture they're creating and how important it is that the entrepreneur, the leader of the team, creates that kind of culture mm-hmm. and really play around and look at how you can create the kind of culture that brings the whole human into play and not just have people put their head down and accomplish the tasks at hand.
Right. And so let me ask you guys this. Do you feel like the business world is evolving to this kind of a model a little bit more?
Kat, what do you think?
I think that there are some businesses that are, and I think that there are a lot of people who would like to think that they are, but I think that actually putting that into practice is a more difficult task. And so I think in some ways it's easier for smaller businesses like MTO to do that because you're covering a smaller area. It's a smaller group sure. of people, right? I could see how it might get more difficult as a company grows. That being said, I do think it's one of those things where you have to have the kind of company culture where people can feel comfortable being open. Mm-hmm. And that is something that is hard to find.
That's more of a systemic issue.
Exactly. And that's the thing is that one of the reasons why it works so well with MTO is that I can come to Gretchen and say, hey, I've got the Emmys opportunity. By the way, I could be styling two people this year, which is what happened. And I can have that conversation with her and talk it through and not have this feeling of like, oh no, how's she going to react? Or mm-hmm. Is my job going to be on the line? You know, it's, mm-hmm. There's negotiation and and sometimes there's not. I mean, with that, it was very easy. It was like, hey, this is coming up. It was like, oh, hell yeah, it's the Emmys. Right. You know? But that's not always true. And I think that not every company, I've certainly worked in companies in the past where it was made very, very clear that our personal lives and our work lives were different and separate and that they should not meet and that they didn't want to know what was going on in your personal life. So I think that, but I do think also to Gretchen's point that that's the issue. Mm-hmm. That's the big problem for so many company cultures. And that's why people leave.
100%. And can I add something there?
Yeah.
So to the point about like, is the trend moving this way? I think it is. I think that, so there is, and I'm sorry, I'm totally not going to remember the name of the company. It's a big company in the UK. Companies need data to make decisions. And once they realize the financial impact of the business is better when they make these other choices, I think they start moving that direction. But there's a company in the UK in London, when the Olympics were in London, the company's headquarters were nearby where a lot of the activity was. So they put up a big sign on their garage door that said, if you don't have to be here, do not come to the office. Because they were losing so much time with people trying to get around all the community that was happening around the Olympics, which is so many more people in town. And because of that, then they put in all the practices that you have to have to be able to have you know, flexibility, whether that's remote work, flex time work, stuff like that, they created. So, you know, Zoom videos, Slack messaging, you know, putting in the systems in place. Well, then they kept that policy moving forward. Like, if you don't have to be in the office, don't come in the office, because they saw that it really worked for their people. A little insight that I think is very fascinating. Someone shared with me a long time ago, and I wish I could credit that person. I don't remember who it was, but that the best way for America to raise their GDP is by getting more women who are qualified to work back into the workforce after they have families. We have a huge part of our population of women who like to work, want to work, don't want to work 9 to 5 where they can't be in their child's life.
Right.
All of a sudden, you open up for flex time and remote work. So many women that are moms want to be able and can do that. But right. So, you know, there's so many talented women out there that we can tap into and literally raise the whole country's GDP, which would be so powerful for us as a nation if we move in this direction. So
I'm absolutely
100% all for it.
And the thing about that is too, though, is we have to strip back this old thinking that we've conditioned since the manufacturing era, that this is the way it has to look, because we still have that in the corporate side.
Absolutely. I think that really gets to the crux of it, right? That there's unlearning that has to happen. There's so many things, you know, if you look back in the history of the last 50 years with women entering the workforce and in some ways dominating and in other ways still struggling to break the glass ceiling, or a lot of ways.
Right.
I think the thing that is really interesting is just that what we have continued to try to do is fit into this old way of doing this work and this old approach to sort of like the corporate or office world, or even just the work world in general. And the problem is that oftentimes the conversation starts from the standpoint of how will this affect women, and the thing that everybody misses in that is that when it affects women, it affects everyone, right? You right. don't get away if women are having to make decisions about between career and family, then that family is impacted. That partner is impacted. There's so many different ways in which we don't look at how everything is connected. And it mm-hmm. starts really with the kind of culture that you cultivate in the company where you work. And that also starts at the top. You can do it in the middle. You can do it at the bottom. But really, if you want to affect change, it has to start with leadership, especially. So
it truly does. And a lot of the leadership that we have, this is not a bashing session. And I always, I always preface that just so people understand that I am not picking any particular, you know, anything apart. I'm just simply, you know, stating objectively that a lot of the leadership that we have in these higher roles have been doing it this way mm-hmm. for decades. So that's why we're still having this conversation. That's why it's still prevalent that it's running this way, is because it's not shifted yet.
Right.
The pendulum is swinging and we have talk about it. Now the action just needs to back it. But that's when we kind of cycle through to a younger leadership generation, you know, that is up and coming and ready for that. That's where that's going to start. We'll start seeing the action behind that, but we're stuck at the moment. You know, I mean, we're seeing it, we're feeling it, we know it. And these cultures, these business cultures have to start from the top. But I do believe that the entrepreneurial revolution that we have right now is fostering that action taking, because they're saying, no, thank you to that culture. I will go create my own thing because I can, you know, because that's yeah. not going to stop me. I'm still going to be able to provide what I want to provide for my family, be a part of my kids' lives, do the things that are I'm passionate about, and have those dueling lives that are together. And it's not a balance one versus the other. It's how is this connected together and the impact it has across the board. So in that, it's coming. You know, but we're still at that time frame.
And I think the other thing that's really fascinating about all of that is the idea that people are getting pushed into entrepreneurship because
yeah.
we feel burnt out. because it is so interesting to think about the idea that people are becoming entrepreneurs because it feels, not because they necessarily even feel led to, but because it just feels so much better than working for someone else who doesn't allow them to be the person that they really are fully. It's a very interesting time to see. And it's also a very interesting time to see how many of those businesses will succeed and fail. And what that failure means, going back to Gretchen's original points about, you know, starting over, you know, again and again. You know, I think that there's probably no better time to hear that.
Yeah. And I'll say too, you know, it's like my heart dropped for a second when you said like so many people, and I agree with you that so many people are starting their own businesses because they've found work cultures to be, you know, unhealthy, unhappy places. But also, you know, starting your own business, there's one thing with like being a freelancer, right?
Yes.
I think you can be a freelancer and not have to run a business. As a consultancy, independent contractor type of stuff, where you really just need to be able to like have a QuickBooks account and send some invoices and keep it straightforward and not need staff and things like that.
Right.
Insurance, you know, all the things that you need when you're running a company. But to start a business is such a huge undertaking. There is not anybody that I know that started a business that didn't say, wow, if I would have known what I know now, I probably would have never done it because I didn't, you know, it's so overwhelming, the experience of it, you know, someone said something to me the other day that resonated with me that I hadn't really thought about. I always thought, you know, this is again about to be 6 years of my business. I've always thought, because as an entrepreneur, you invest all your money in your business. That's what that looks like.
Right.
And so people don't really know that. And so you invest all your money. As long as you want to grow your business, you need to invest in it. But I didn't realize that. I kind of thought in my mind that as it grew, there would be a point in time in which, you know, whether that's $100,000 a year in revenue or 500 or a million, that there's a number that you hit that then you're not investing all your money back in the business. And what someone said to me the other day, which was an aha for me, was, oh no, you invest all your money back in your business as long as you want growth.
Right.
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 At the point that you're like, okay, this is the cap. I'm happy with $500,000 a year, whatever that number is. I don't need it to grow anymore. This is the size of the business I want. Then you start taking more money out of the business. But as long as you want growth, you're putting that money in because you need to kind of pay it forward to get that moving all the time and invest in that next thing that's going to help you grow. So
the transition of growth, you know, has that threshold where you have to invest in order to build a sustainable platform for that next phase.
100%.
Yeah, because you can't do it any other ways. You know, that's absolutely the only way to do it. And that's a threshold that some people are comfortable doing to a certain point. And then some people are like, let's go, it's time, you know, and those are phases and evolutionary shifts inside of businesses. But that's awesome though, to think of that it doesn't always have to be an investment back to your business, because you can just kind of put it on autopilot for a little bit until you get that win to move it again to the next level.
Yeah. And I've had times where I put a pause on the business and the business is still running, but I wasn't investing in it. And I went in-house as a CMO, was able to kind of, you know, get back on my feet a little bit more financially and then go back and then rev up and invest more in the business. I think if you really want to run your own business, sometimes you have to just figure out what's work and make things work, you know?
Right.
You need to be creative and clever and thoughtful. And, you know, I've seen these like, kind of memes that have gone around, not really meme, but like a graphic that shows like the entrepreneur's path. And it's kind of like, climb this wall, jump over this pit of snakes, you know, go around a bit, you know, go way out of your way, circle back, go backwards, go forwards. It's like, it's such a crazy journey. At the other side of that, on the other hand, like, I wouldn't have it any other way. Like, for me, I love it all, even though it's scary and it's intimidating and it's stressful. It's also exciting and an adventure. And there's nothing I have ever been more fulfilled with than creating a company culture where people love their jobs and hearing them tell me that, you know, they're happy in their jobs and that MTO is creating the work for them that makes them fulfilled. You know, it's literally the most satisfying thing I've ever had in my career. So I definitely think for those of you that have the stomach for it, it's worth it.
And I wanted to ask you that real quick. I'd written this down. How did you create that culture, Gretchen?
Well, I'll tell you, there's a lot of trial and error. I brought with me, I'm a Gen X. I was raised in company culture. Well, first I was in film production, which has it's pretty much the second, it's the most hierarchical type of business industry other than like the military, as far as I'm concerned, because when you have a shoot, say you're, you know, doing some big action stunt type of thing and you have 200 people working on the same shoot at the same time, it has to be extremely orderly. Everybody needs to know who's in charge. That person needs to communicate something and everybody needs to do what they say without question. So I came from that. And then I went into corporate life where the people that I was taught how to run businesses and how to run teams came from that old way of thinking. And it's fear-based and it's, you know, I'm in charge, do what I say because I say it, you know, just get it done, kind of task mastery. And it wasn't working for me, you know, like people weren't happy. I wasn't a good boss. People were not happy working for me. I lost staff and it just wasn't working. I had to figure out a better way. And I wanted to figure out a better way. And, you know, one of the pieces of advice I think entrepreneurs need to hear is to, you know, culture is created from all of the people. It is top down in some ways because you have to, there's leadership involved and you have to implement the stuff and make sure that it's implemented. But at the same time, like, I think it's created by the team and the group of people, and that as a leader, you have to be open to allowing the team to create that culture. And, you know, I will give Kat a lot of credit for teaching me, you know, that there's better ways of doing stuff. She has worked at companies in the past that she felt like had really great cultures. And she brought those insights into how that was created and how we could do that internally. And, you know, I want to create that kind of culture. I didn't necessarily have those own examples myself. So, you know, when someone on the team came to say, oh, I've seen this done and this is how I've seen it done, you know, not everything is the right fit for us. And some things I say, no, you know, not right now, or yeah, I'm not sure about that. But 95% of what, you know, she said, this, how she's seen great stuff happen, you know, we've adopted and adapted. And I just think listening to your team, you know, having good intentions and then listening to your team to figure out what that means to them. I'll give you this one little anecdote and then kind of hand it back over for the group conversation. But, you know, I do these workshops. We do these workshops as a company where we start everything we do in marketing. We're a marketing agency. So everything we do starts from a values exercise. And so we always go into companies, we have their teams in there, and we talk about what the company's values are. And, you know, I'll tell you, a lot of times the difference between the CEO and the team is great, and they're not talking about these things enough. One time the question was, you know, that we're throwing out, that everyone's throwing out like words that they think are values of the company or values for them. And then the CEO said, fun, we're a fun company. And he was sitting in the front, and behind him, all of his team members were like shaking their head, like, no, 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 we are not a fun company. And so then I said, okay, because I'm not going to call them out. He can't even see them. Okay, so let's talk about what fun means to you. And then when I said, what's fun mean to you? The CEO is like, well, everyone can wear jeans on Friday. This has now become a saying where, with a lot of people I know, we're like, how fun is it? Like jeans on Friday kind of fun? Or like real fun. And so, but when we went around the room, you know, other people's idea of fun is let's have more holiday parties. Let us ride scooters in the office. Let us, you know what I mean? Like they had all these ideas of what fun meant. And I think we have to have those conversations, and companies are not having those conversations with their teams. So I really recommend opening that dialogue up so that your team members can create, can co-create the culture with you. And that's when I think you can create the culture that everybody's happy with.
That's where the magic happens.
Totally.
Did he learn anything from that? I gotta know.
I hope so. I don't know. I do think in that moment that he understood that people have different ideas of what that word means. I don't know if it shifted the company culture or not. You know, shifting the company culture takes commitment.
Yes, it does.
And it's not always pleasant. You know, sometimes the team comes and says, "Hey, you're not, you said we would do this and you're not doing this. And, you know, we need to revisit that." And sometimes that's hard to hear, but you know, that's how you kind of create the company culture, is you let those walls down and you do co-create. Mm-hmm. And, Kat, I'd love to kind of toss this to you to kind of get your insight on it as someone that has been a leader on that with our team.
Well, so I worked with Barrett, one of the publishers, in fact, the last publisher I worked for before I jumped ship from the industry and into fashion, was an incredible education for me. And I like to joke that they ruined me. It was Barrett Kohler Publishers. They're based in Oakland now. They started in San Francisco. They have an incredible origin story with the founder, Steve, actually working for a different major publisher and getting fired because he refused to let people go from his team when he was adamant that that is not what needed to happen. And so he has always been one of those people who was driven as a people first leader. Mm-hmm. And authors started calling him and saying, you know, what are you going to do? Are you going to start your own company? And so that's how Barrett Kohler was born. And so it's always started from this kind of radical place. And what was so amazing about working there is that I got to see the inner workings of what a truly values-driven company looks like. And it was unlike any culture I've ever experienced before. And it's been such a delight to be able to bring some of the things I learned from that into MTO. Some of the things that were really interesting in the way that Barrett Kohler did their work is, for example, when books would come through, book proposals, the editors would, of course, sift through things and they would pick the things that they thought were the projects with the most promise and flesh it out and then bring it to the entire staff to vote on it. As a company, we voted on whether or not we would give ourselves a raise every year and what that raise would look like. And transparency was a huge piece of the company culture. And so people could really talk about what they were doing outside of work and they could work from home a couple days a week if they needed to. And, you know, it was just incredibly flexible and truly focused on the whole person. And just so thoughtful and respectful of every person who worked in the company, whether they were an intern or HR or production or editors, or it didn't matter if you were an assistant or a manager, everyone's voice mattered. So it was really incredible to be able to witness that. It was honestly very difficult to leave them. it's actually not a surprise that there are a number of people who've been with that company for well over a decade and just continue to grow in the company. So I've a lot of the things that I learned about what a company culture could look like came directly from there. But the other thing was we published business books and leadership books. And so it was also really important that we walked the walk. And so it was so interesting to get to learn about business and leadership from these other incredible, you know, change makers who were out there changing their own company cultures. We had the former CEO of Popeyes, Cheryl Backelder, for example. We had people who did consulting for Whole Foods and lots of different major companies who showed how they were helping companies make a shift. And so I think one of the things that was really interesting for me was working on the B Corp handbook. Are you familiar with what B corporations are?
I am, yes.
Okay. So I'll just give the quick sort of summary in case people aren't. Sure. What I love about B corporations is that it is a certification for businesses that shows that they have values in place and are really putting them into practice. Mm-hmm. And so it's a great way, if you go to the B Corp website, it's a great way to shop with businesses or work with businesses that you can trust really are putting people in the planet first. So that was really interesting to me and always stuck with me. And so as I've gone on in my own career in fashion and also in marketing, it's been very important for me to put those values first. And the other thing that has just kind of been in the back of my mind as we've been talking about this is the true business case for values-driven marketing, or sorry, values-driven business and the marketing aspect of that, right? So thinking about how MTO Agency is a values-driven marketing agency and what that means, I'm sure Gretchen would have a lot to share on this, but for myself, what that means to me is that we have seen there's just a growing number of statistics out there that show that people are changing the way that they are making decisions about what to buy. For so long, and it's still true that people will go for things that are the cheapest and they don't really care where the business comes from, right? Like there is a hierarchy of needs in these things, but more and more, as things continue to heighten and grow on the political side, we are seeing people make more and more defined decisions about the values of the company. And so that's why in the fashion industry, for example, we've seen this growing trend of more businesses committing to sustainability. It's because people are demanding it. And we're seeing more commitment to ethical manufacturing. It's because people are demanding it. So we're seeing people start to vote more with their dollar and also make more decisions about what they are bringing into their homes, what they're bringing into their lives, who they're doing business with based on values. So there's absolutely a lot of money out there to be made in when you create a business that is values focused and really focused on putting and marketing those values.
That's fascinating that you say that. Do you believe or feel that values and transparency are two of the vehicles that have to be driven forward on a business or any entrepreneur that's taken their idea or their creation to a business model?
Personally, I do. I think that transparency is kind of the first step. Mm-hmm. A lot of times in the ethical fashion world, for example, transparency is often the first place we start with whether a business, there are a lot of businesses that will greenwash, right? And so in a business really showing their proof, in marketing, we would call this social proof, right? In social media, right? The things that you're showing that people can use to determine whether you're the real deal and build trust. So transparency is definitely where it starts in my mind. I don't know, Gretchen, what do you think?
I say yes to. I think that, we talk about this all the time. I just did a webinar this morning about it. That values are the number one reason we connect, we like make friends with people. The people we choose to spend time with is because they share our values mm-hmm. with us. You know, you might like get to know somebody, think you like them. And then if they do something that's not aligned with your values, you will exit that friendship. We feel the same way towards businesses. I think it was a Harvard Business Review research that showed that like 63% of people that said that they wanted to have a relationship with a brand, the reason that they did is because of shared values. You know, we see that show up with, Chick-fil-A, these huge campaigns that are about these chicken sandwiches and stuff. This is about people sharing their values on what type of company they stand for. And knowing what your values are make up the core of who we are as humans, and it makes up the core of who we are as businesses. So I think this is a first step that every business needs to take to define who they are, who they aim to be, what those sort of boundaries are on what they do and what they don't do. You know, we have people go through, we call it the social brand identity, to really help develop the persona around the business. And we look at, you know, what are your values for the product, your products and services, the materials that you use, the, you know, employees that you hire, the vendors that you use, all of that. We really look at that and, you know, push companies to articulate that and then to integrate it across every single thing that they do, from, you know, job descriptions to interview questions to employee handbooks and also the brand. So, you know, internally and externally, those should be represented. And when you do that, then you can create a brand that people care about and a business that people are loyal to. So we think of it as the absolute starting point.
I also, I love that you brought up Chick-fil-A, because that I can't think of Chick-fil-A without thinking about the more recent thing that happened, which was the Popeye's chicken sandwich and how... So first of all, I didn't know this, but apparently the sandwich has like been on the menu. This isn't like Popeye's put out a new chicken sandwich to rival Chick-fil-A. Yeah. What really happened is that people were like, oh, I know you guys really love this chicken sandwich, but if your values don't align with Chick-fil-A, here's an alternative. But what's funny about it is then all of these headlines started going out. People went crazy for it. And talk about how your company values impact things. Popeyes has sold out of that sandwich. It's sold out. If you go through the drive-through or you go to the store, they all have the signs up that say we're out of the chicken sandwich. It is so popular. And so the thing that's really interesting about it is I think that so many companies make the mistake of thinking like, oh, you know, I'm just a hair salon. I don't have a position, or I'm just a chicken, fried chicken, you know, shop, like whatever it might be. But, you know, one of the headlines that came out, and this was from Salon, was in the Popeyes versus Chick-fil-A fried chicken war, a sandwich is never just a sandwich.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, if you want to talk about it as chicken sandwiches, or you're going to talk about it as hair salons, or you're going to talk about whatever your business is, your position on it matters.
Right.
And how you support what happens out in the world, because again, that sandwich already existed when people started to co-opt it as the quote unquote non-homophobic sandwich, mm-hmm. is when it flew off the shelves and now they're sold out of it, right? And so Popeyes had a decision to make in that moment, whether or not they wanted to lean in, and they did. And had it not, it might've been a different story for them.
They probably would not be where they are at this particular moment with that, but they highlighted the values that they stood for, right. You know, so because, and Chick-fil-A is a very fascinating case scenario, I would say, on our culture today, you know, that values driven is becoming much more apparent, and having transparency in those values is becoming very, very important for people to determine where they want to put their dollars and where they want to spend their money and what businesses they want to back and what entrepreneurs they're going to follow. You know, so with having that, there couldn't be a better case scenario of Chick-fil-A versus Popeye on that right there.
Yes. And also it makes me hungry.
I know. Right? Who doesn't love a good chicken sandwich? No matter which side, which one you're going to get it from. I mean, that's a good chicken sandwich.
I will say that I think Chick-fil-A sandwiches are so delicious, and I've boycotted them since the moment I found out their stance on LGBTQ. And I have been starving in an airport where that was the only choice of that damn sandwich. So, but
that's important to you.
That is important.
That's important to you. And that is what matters in today's world of oversaturation of all things chatter. We've had to stand for something. And this is what we stand for. And we make a stand. And you can be in an airport where nobody else is going to see you, whether you decide because you're starving, that's the only opportunity where you go have that stand. No, you're standing for your values because you're making that stand. Because who are we then if we don't?
Yep.
100%. So, I mean, we could go off on an awesome tangent on that, but I want, in the last little bit of time we have here, I want to ask each one of you, what is the definition of success in your entrepreneurial journey, collectively or individually?
For me, well, I want my business to be an $8 to $10 million a year revenue business. So that's the financial number that looks like success for me. I think that's the number where we all get to the company and all its team get to kind of have everything that we want and be able to do all the things we want to do, and also still be in a position that we can have lifestyle first. I want to be a great place to work. I don't need an award for it, but I would like my team all to feel like it's such a great place to work that they talk about it, you know, to their friends and their families. I would like that to be in a world where you can't poach my team for me because they are very happy in their jobs. I would like to be a great community member in my local community where I live in. Our office HQ is in Ashland, Oregon. We moved here from Los Angeles, and we have a distributed team. They're all over from, I think, Bend to Chicago to Mexico and pretty much in between, that here and wherever they live that, you know, we're participating as good community members, that we're helping, we're doing our jobs and helping people, the people that come to us, both as our online education members and to companies that work with us through the agency, being shining the light on the path for them to achieve high growth while being a conscious company. That's our mission. And so, yeah, I think I look at it from all those places.
Yeah. Ditto. I also want MTO to be an $8 to $10 million company. I want everyone to be able to feel successful and stable and comfortable going after the things that they want. For me personally, I think one of the biggest surprises of my career has been how much I enjoy having a day job and keeping styling as a side project and keeping it as a passion project that does make money, but not in a way that I feel completely compelled to throw myself into 24/7. Mm-hmm. And being able to have that balance has been so important to me. And I just think that there's so many things that we're told about. This kind of goes back to the thing of people being thrown into or feeling like the only option is to become an entrepreneur. I don't necessarily think entrepreneurship is for everyone. I think that there, and also I think it can look different for everyone. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean that I won't one day change my mind about that. I'm always open to that possibility. But for me right now, the best place I can be is where I am, which is being able to pursue things that I love, and feeling the stability in the rest of my life in order to do that, financially, health insurance, all of those things. It's such a huge risk. One thing I didn't mention is that I have lupus, and I have lived with lupus since I was 18. I'm pretty good at managing it most days, some days not, and you can't always, you know, diseases do what they want. And so I think one of the other things is that a lot of people, you can't measure your own success by what are the like general mainstream metrics, right? Like right. When you live with illness or any kind of disability or something that makes you different, you have to learn to adapt to your own wavelength. You have to learn to reconstruct a path that works for you. And so that's why for me, it's so having that stability and that grounding of having a job with MTO where I feel fulfilled and I get the stability of a paycheck and I also get to work with amazing people is for me pretty gratifying. It's hard for me to imagine having something bigger than that because I'm allowed to do the styling on the side. So surprising for me to hear myself even say that sometimes.
This
is not what other people expect of you, I think is the biggest thing, right? Like people always expect, and it's funny, like people say, oh, okay. So for example, I will do my small little brag real quick, which is that one of the women that I dressed for the Emmys, her dress got picked up in 2 different best dress lists and has gotten press from, I got my first Vogue credit. I got my first Nylon credit. You know, it was pretty exciting to see my work show up on all of these amazing fashion media sites. And I think a lot of people would look at that and say, oh, what's next? You know, and it's like, nope, this is the same. I go to work on Monday and, and I'm happy with that. That's the life that feels good for me. And I think most people feel the pressure to go out and be more and be bigger. And it's okay actually to be, I think the lesson for me was that it's okay to not necessarily want or need more right now.
And I want to honor the space, Kat, that you brought to this interview, because there are plenty of listeners that, as entrepreneurs, we're told it's all or nothing. I mean, there's so much of that in the online space. In everywhere you turn around, it's like, if you're not a successful entrepreneur, you're, you know, something's wrong with you, you're doing it wrong. Or, you know, what about those women that are out there that do love their job, but also get to follow that entrepreneurial calling on, you know, the passion projects they work for or work with and do? That is a space that is not frequently talked about, which is acceptable.
Right.
You know, there's no one saying that it can't be. So why can't that be an answer, a solution, a moment, you know, whatever that looks like? Why can't we let that be okay? And that's what I want listeners to hear, all these stories of entrepreneurial women doing many, many awesome different things and having all of these crazy journeys that brought them to the point that they're at today, but also being able to hear that it doesn't have to be just that. It can be a combination, and you can find fantastic people to work with and work for that makes your world complete.
Right. I think that unfortunately, I don't think there are enough people like Gretchen, but I think that it is a growing movement. And the more we talk about it, the more it influences other people to create and cultivate that environment who are leaders. Mm-hmm. And I also think that there are ways in which it's good to use your own voice. I mean, the thing that has been great is that I've been in a space where I can say, hey, these are some things I've seen work at places like Barrett Kohler, or here's what doesn't work. You know, I think being able, even just starting with being able to have those conversations is key. But there's so much that is out there that, especially I think because we're really trying to push women to lean in and to go for it. And I think it's important that anybody who wants to lean in, anybody who wants to step up and break glass ceilings and do something they've never done before should feel supported in it. I just as much think it's important that we honor that everybody's path is different and their ambitions are different, and that's okay too. And we need all of that. We need people at every one of those levels of ambition and drive. And we need people who feel very satisfied in what they're doing, because those people keep things going, right? So, and I think that's the conversation I don't hear happening enough. And the expectations that we put on ourselves sometimes aren't coming from ourselves. So it's important that we realize who is really driving us and why we're moving forward.
Right. Absolutely. Gretchen, what do you think?
I just feel so, you know, good hearing when, you know, you have a team member that says that, you know, they think that more people should be like you. It's such the
that's awesome
best feeling in the whole world. And I, you know, have learned so much from Kat. And so, you know, I definitely feel the same way about her. And I think, you know, all of us that feel this way, we need to do our job to spread the word, like Kat said, and be examples. I have I contribute to Forbes, and I have a podcast that needs to be dusted off. But I want to start really showcasing the different companies that are being conscious leaders and how that works to model more examples. I think that we do need more examples. But you know, we're here to do our part for sure. And appreciate the platform that you have for us to be able to share what we're doing, and hope that there was a nugget or two that someone can take and implement in their own business.
Absolutely. Where can we find more about you guys?
MTOagency.com probably is the best, although we have a whole brand new website that's coming. So you can go to the old one, but we do have a new one on deck. Kat, you want to share your Instagram?
I'm at Style Ethic on everything, and that's ethic like ethical. I'm Style Ethic on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. That old place, Twitter.
That one's still there? No, I'm just joking. Yeah. I know it is.
No, it's funny. I really dipped out of Twitter for a while. And lately, some of the folks that I really enjoy interacting with have been active there. And it's made, I'm back on the Twitter train right now. So,
well, there you have it.
It's cyclical for me as well.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah. Thank you guys for coming on the podcast today. This has been absolutely amazing. I didn't know how it was going to shape or what it was going to look like, you know, but I'm so open to so many possibilities of what it is and just how that journey of us even connecting came about and being on this podcast even together came about. So thank you for being fluid and open and willing, you know, to step into this space, this podcast.
Yeah. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, appreciate it. And also, it's interesting. Of course, it goes for us to a whole values and conscious like capitalism conversation. Really all we care about. So thank you for allowing that to unfold for us too.
You bet. Guys, as always, keep moving forward.
Thanks for listening to the FemNation podcast. Be sure to check out our show notes for more details from the episode. If you love the show, share it with a friend or drop me a note. I'd love to hear from you over at whitedovegannon.com or find me on social media. Until next time, keep moving forward.